You're in the loop. We're here to discuss the ups, downs, and sideways of the sport of figure skating, and maybe give you plus 5 DUE along the way.
I am Kite, and I am already tired of 2021 with a capital T. You can find me on Twitter at Mossy's Inc.
Hi, I'm Tilda. The T stands for tired of this BS. I'm on Twitter at Tikilda.
Okay, so before we jump into this episode, we wanted to make one thing clear to the listeners. So this is an episode about the four big national competitions, Russian, Japanese, US, and Canadian. We're going to be focusing on the Russian and Japanese nationals in particular. But we are not going to be following our usual format of discussing the performances and the results. And instead, we're going to be devoting this episode to assessing how these events coped with the COVID restrictions and the impact that their actions or inactions had on the skaters and the rest of the season.
So the fun things. We will not talk about the fun things here. Okay, should we get into it with Russian nationals first?
Yes, let's do that. Let's just go over the podium for Russian nationals before we get into the meat of this episode. And men, in first place, we had Mikhail Kolyada. In second place, Makar Ignatov. And in third place, Mark Kondratiuk. In ladies, first place, Anna Sherbakova. Second place, Kamila Valieva. In third place, Alexandra Trusova. In pairs, we had Evgenia Tarasova and Vladimir Morozov in first, Alexandra Boykova and Dmitry Kozlovsky in second, and Daria Pavlyuchenko and Denis Kotikin in third. And in ice dance, we had Alexandra Stepanova and Yvonne Buchan in first, Tiffany Zagorsky and Jonathan Guerrero in second, and Anastasia Skoptkova and Kirill Aleshin in third.
We had some important withdrawals here as well. So, for example, we've got the people recovering from COVID, Dmitry Aliyev, Roman Savosin, Yevgenia Medvedeva, who also had serious lung damage that required hospitalization. Also, Victoria Sinitsina and Nikita Katsalapov as well recovering from COVID. Also, I think Victoria had lung damage as well. And of course, Alyona Kostranaya recovering from COVID as well.
So they're all recovering from COVID. All the withdrawals of the big names were due to COVID, which unfortunately is going to kind of be a theme of this segment. Of the skaters who possibly to probably had it but did not actually call it as COVID, we had Anna Sherbakova, who had pneumonia prior to Rostelecom Cup and ended up withdrawing from that. Alexandra Boykova, who had a cold and withdrew from the fifth stage of the Russian Cup. Denis Kotikin, who had an acute respiratory infection, and Jonathan Guerrero. And Tiffany Zagorsky, his partner, had COVID over the summer, but we are not aware of if Jonathan had it or not. So there were not a lot of details made public about kind of the exact precautions that were taken prior to this event. Gorshkov, who's the president of the Russian Fed, said that skaters were required to test negative for COVID within 24 hours of arriving at the venue, which has been pretty commonplace, it seems, over the big competitions that have happened this season. But there is no evidence that they require temperature checks or really any other precautions of the audience, which was quite packed. And unfortunately, we did see instances of skaters flouting the mask rules, like in the pairs photo that was taken after the event when you had the three medalist teams taking, you know, press photos. They were wearing their masks in a way that is a mask is not intended to be worn. That kind of shows a general disregard for the precautions that were taken, as well as, you know, little to no evidence of enforcement from the event's organizers.
Especially because those skaters who were in that photo, a lot of them have had COVID at this point.
Yeah, so it was just very kind of unfortunate and disappointing to see that kind of behavior at a major event, given, you know, how many skaters on the Russian team have been affected at this point. I think people in the figure skating community obviously have been aware that Russia's team is not coping super well with COVID right now. And after Russian nationals concluded, the crisis actually gained international media attention. So Louise Rydnovsky, who is a journalist with the Wall Street Journal, published an article on December 27th basically talking about how Russia's skating culture has been seriously impacted by the pandemic. So just a couple notable quotes. She said that no other Federation skaters have reported anywhere close to the number of coronavirus cases that Russia has. And she also comments on several skaters, in particular Anna Shcherbakova, who, quote, appeared distressed and struggling to breathe. And Yelizaveta Tukhtomysheva, who had a bout of COVID in early December and, quote, seemed sluggish and drained following her bout with COVID. It is quite notable, I would say, that international journals and newspapers are taking notice of the situation.
So once again, we also kind of briefly want to touch on what the responsibility of the coaches and the event organizers have in determining when athletes can compete. And we talked a bit about this before when we talked about Sofia Somodurova, for example, competing with a fever. But, I mean, ISU has rules governing when skaters can be made to withdraw for medical concerns. Anna Shcherbakova is a minor, but she is over 16, and 16 is the age where you don't need a parent or a guardian consent to compete against medical advice. But of course, that's for international events, and the Russian Federation can set their own rules, and we don't really know what Russian Federation's specific rules are for this.
I think kind of a major takeaway from Russian nationals for a lot of people who watched it, unfortunately, was the fact that Anna Shcherbakova did not look like she was in a condition where she should have been competing or skating competitive programs to the level of difficulty that she ultimately did. So she was seen visibly struggling to breathe after her short program, which was the standard layout short program that she's been doing, you know, since she started her senior career. And usually it, you know, wasn't going to be something that was extremely difficult for her to do. And she was seen at the boards beforehand inhaling something which possibly was smelling salts. And for those of our listeners who might not be aware, smelling salts are just basically solid ammonium carbonate, and it's used to revive athletes like boxers. So if a boxer gets knocked out, they can kind of be brought to with smelling salts, but it's very dangerous because it can mask concussion symptoms, and it's also used as a stimulant for other athletes. And I feel like most people probably know, in general, inhaling ammonia gas is not great. If it's in a large enough dose, it can be fatal. And even in smaller doses, it can irritate the mucous membranes of the nose and the mouth. But it is not specifically banned in athletic competitions. So this is kind of some speculation based on what was seen on video, that she definitely was seen inhaling something at the boards that her coaches gave her. And based on kind of her condition after the skate, it was thought that it could have been smelling salts.
And I think you wanted to talk a little bit about the medical side of COVID that I think you know a bit more than I do.
Yeah, so we're not really going to get into, you know, super esoteric detail here, but basically around the same time that these events were happening, there was kind of this well-publicized study that came out of the Ohio State University that studied athletes post-COVID to see kind of what the effect on their hearts was. And so they surveyed only athletes who had mild cases. So none of them were hospitalized and none of them received antiviral therapy. In post-recovery, which was 11 to 53 days after their quarantine, they underwent cardiac MRIs to see, you know, what kind of effects on the heart that their bout of COVID had caused. And it was found that 15% of the athletes had myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle. And symptoms include chest pain, fatigue, shortness of breath, and arrhythmias, which is just basically an irregular rhythm of the heart. And in addition to that, 30.8% showed what is called late gadolinium enhancement, or LGE, which is basically a cardiac MRI technique that can identify scar tissue. So basically, an additional 30.8% of the athletes that were surveyed showed evidence of heart damage as a result of COVID. So if you add that up, that's almost 50% of the athletes showed, you know, some evidence of an effect on the heart or heart damage. And this is significantly after they actually were sick.
And this is with the ones who had mild cases as well.
Yeah, so none of these people were hospitalized or received, you know, any kind of special therapy aside from, you know, I guess what you would normally take if you got sick. So obviously that's a pretty stunning result. This is not necessarily super new research. We've known for a couple months now that a pretty significant proportion of people will have, you know, complications even after they are no longer testing positive for COVID. And I think it is really quite concerning to see this pattern in athletes, because you kind of think of athletes as people who are, you know, physically very fit, very healthy. And all of the athletes, the sports that they surveyed were all kind of, you know, very cardiac intensive sports. And I think figure skating, you know, would definitely fall into that category. So it definitely is extremely concerning to consider the fact that a lot of the athletes who had COVID and are now skating may still be dealing with complications that we don't know about.
So again, we have to consider what the role of the coaches and the parents are in prioritizing skaters' safety when perhaps this is not the kind of decision that a minor is necessarily in the right state of mind to take.
Right. And I think kind of what we observed over Russian nationals as a whole is, personally for me at least, wishing that the adults who are around these minor skaters, so whether it's parents, guardians, coaches, choreographers, you know, whoever they brought with them, kind of wishing that they would have taken a more forceful stance if they were aware that, you know, the skaters were struggling this much. Because if you see a skater struggle, you know, the way Anna did after her short program, that is not something that, you know, came out on the day of the short program. You know, that is something that they would have seen in practice.
She did have a fever, as reported by R Sport. Before the short program, she had a fever of 38 degrees Celsius, which is 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit, I think. She was still permitted to compete because she reportedly refused to withdraw.
Right, so according to the article, her team said that they did offer her the chance to withdraw if she wanted to, and she said no. And then the following day, before the free skate, she refused to have her temperature taken.
Which, again, is perhaps not a choice that she should have been necessarily given.
Well, that just kind of, for me, throws into question the whole, you know, organizational aspect of this event. Is that I would assume that the point of, you know, taking temperature of skaters, you know, coaches, whatever, before they compete is to make sure that they're not posing health risks.
And I mean, this is not just for her health. This is for the health of the other athletes and indeed all of the other people around her. I mean, the reason we have COVID tests and temperature tests is to protect everyone in the event from the risk of infection, right?
Exactly. And, you know, obviously the skaters aren't going to be wearing masks, you know, in their 6-minute warm-up or during their program. That's just not, you know, something that's realistic. But you also saw, for example, at the boards, a lot of the coaches were not wearing masks at all during the program, or were wearing them improperly, so they weren't covering both the mouth and the nose. And so to me, that just really speaks to kind of lax enforcement of these regulations that are really there to keep everybody safe, you know, including the skaters, because at the end of the day, they are taking a really big risk to their health by competing at all. So, you know, it really was quite upsetting to see that. Again, not to, you know, really beat this dead horse any more than it needs to be, but a lot of the Russian national team has had COVID at this point. You know, some very top athletes have had complications that have required them to be off the ice to even be in the hospital. So one would hope at one point or another that the people who are organizing this event would take a look at that situation and realize how serious it is and try to implement more, you know, stringent protocols if you are going to have an event as big as Russian Nationals.
And especially because we also had Sofia Samodurova, who competed with a fever as well as test skates. That shows that it happened once, it happens again. So it makes one wonder if after that happened, that they hadn't implemented more measures in to make sure that it didn't happen again.
Right. So I personally would not assume that there was any sort of harsh response from the Russian Federation towards, you know, what happened with Sofia at test skates if this happened again and it was, you know, publicized in the news. They obviously don't think that there's going to be, you know, any kind of strong response from the Federation. And, you know, we do want to point out that this is obviously a very complex issue to unpack because Anna is a minor. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's the adults around her who should be taking responsibility for her health and her safety. But I do have to wonder, what is the point of having health guidelines in a pandemic if the athlete is allowed to decide which health checks they undergo. Like, to me, that's not something that should be optional.
And of course, it raises a huge question about Worlds. If Worlds happens, is it fair to risk the health of other athletes? Because some teams, like the Russian team, haven't shown a willingness to adhere to safety protocols in their own domestic competitions. So how safe is it to have them travel to another country and compete with the entire international skating world?
Right. And it's like, attitude reflects leadership, right? So you have teams who are willfully disregarding COVID protocols, allowing their skaters to compete while they are ill. If not with COVID, then at least, you know, letting a skater compete with the fever, obviously something is not right. And since we know that fever is one of the symptoms of COVID, you know, it's very inappropriate to basically say, well, you know, they didn't want to withdraw and they didn't want to have their temperature taken, but we let them compete anyway. I feel like if you are not willing to adhere to the standards that are set in order to keep everybody safe, then you should not be competing, frankly.
One thing that worries me personally is that the Russian Federation is one of the biggest and most influential federations in the ISU. And I have a hard time imagining either ISU sanctioning the Russian Federation directly for breaking safety protocols, but also I have a hard time imagining any other federation being willing to show such a blatant disregard for safety as well. It does sort of feel like they think that they can get away with it, you know?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And I think this laissez-faire attitude is definitely due to the fact that, you know, they are one of the most powerful federations in the world. And, you know, their skaters win medals. And so it's not in the ISU's best interest to take out, you know, a whole swath of world top elite skaters. Like, that's just not, from a business perspective, that's just not going to happen. But I think what they could do in, you know, their inability to, you know, sanction RusFed or, you know, specific teams, what they could do is kind of create more sweeping infrastructure in general to ensure that people don't slip through the cracks when it comes to getting tested and, you know, being asymptomatic, and they can't, you know, take back doors, like just refuse to have their temperature taken. And they really need to be kind of zero tolerance when it comes to things like this, because at the end of the day, it is not only their health, it's the health of everybody who's there, you know, including people who might be at risk, people who might be older, who might have health conditions. And that's something that they're really going to need to close kind of every door that's even slightly ajar for Worlds to not turn into a super spreader event, because as we've seen, there are teams, unfortunately, who are willing to disregard public safety and public health in the interest of having their skaters compete. And I don't think that's acceptable. And I hope that the international skating community also feels that that's not acceptable and really, you know, pushes for these changes to be implemented prior to Worlds, if it's to be held at all.
At the same time, it's like, these skaters are all incredibly talented, and all probably a lot of them are contenders for Olympic spots, Olympic medals. So it does seem rather risky to risk their health in this way from a medal standpoint. Like, I think it probably would have been a better strategy to just be careful this season and try to prepare more for the Olympic season instead.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I just want to, you know, make it super clear, because we are being quite critical of how this event was organized, that we don't place any of the blame on the skaters themselves. Especially in Russia, they do feel undeniable pressure to compete, because in normal years, Russian nationals is a prerequisite to make it to the spring championships like Europeans and Worlds. That is probably going to change this year just because some of the big names had to withdraw. And I assume that, you know, they're going to try to make the world team if they're physically capable. So they're probably going to have to tweak their guidelines a little bit. But, you know, just to reiterate, we are not placing this on the shoulders of the skaters, but rather on kind of the whole organizational structure that allowed this to happen to begin with. And yeah, like Tilda said, no one really wins in this situation. Like, you have these, you know, extremely talented skaters who are capable of winning world and Olympic medals. And it's really disheartening to see their federation and their teams seemingly willing to risk that so close to the Olympics, because the Olympics are only a year away at this point.
Yeah, they are. And I also think that the media has a responsibility to call out concerning things when they happen, which I haven't really seen happening. I haven't seen people in the skating world calling it out either.
Yes, in some cases. I think no in some other cases. So before we kind of get into this, because it's quite, you know, hefty and kind of complex topic, there is precedent for kind of commentators at least calling out situations that make them uncomfortable or seem unsafe. So at the Cup of Russia in 2016, Eurosport's Simon Reed criticized Alexei Urmanov, who was Yulia Lipnitskaya's coach, after Yulia stopped mid-program due to an injury that had been bothering her for quite a while. And, you know, both commentators actually were quite shocked, A, that she went out there to compete at all, and B, you know, after she stopped and talked to her coach, she then went back and completed her program despite, you know, visibly not being in a condition to where she should have been skating competitively. And following the program, Reed said, quote, "I don't know what was going on in Alexei Urmanov's head or in Yulia's head, but she's only 18. He's not 18. And to me, I think that's quite a good way of approaching it, is to remind the audience and remind the skating world that coaches do have a responsibility to their skaters, particularly when those skaters are quite young, to ensure that they are making the best decision for their health and for their safety in the long term, rather than chasing results in the short term.
And we did have Jackie Wong criticizing Anna's coaches as well for letting her skate with a fever at Russia Nationals because of the risk to herself and to others.
Yeah, and that was, you know, really quite refreshing to see, because Jackie, as some people may know, is known for his kind of live tweeting of events and going through programs, you know, bit by bit. And he is quite a big presence in the skating community online, at least. And so it was really quite nice for him to come out and say, you know, point blank, that this was not appropriate behavior from Anna's team, and that, you know, it did pose a significant risk to everybody at the event, not just herself.
But then on the flip side, we have Ted Barton's commentary. Ted Barton, who was the commentator, the English commentator for the Russian Nationals, who said after her free skate, and I quote, "People question her, but don't. Look what she did. I try to look back and remember a moment that was this outstanding, and I can't." So I think that is a pretty disappointing thing to say after a skate when she is visibly struggling.
Right. And I just want to clarify that this was said after her free skate, which, you know, afterwards she didn't look quite as winded as she did after the short program. But, you know, in the free skate commentary, Ted did point out that she was quite winded the day before, like struggling to breathe following the short program. And that was something that he mentioned in his commentary after she finished her free skate, to basically say, you know, she doesn't look as winded as she did yesterday, but to not kind of address the root of that issue, which was why did she look so exhausted after her short program, I think was quite irresponsible, to be honest, especially from a commentator who a lot of fans did and still do look to as kind of this very positive force in skating, especially when it comes to, you know, junior competitions, about always trying to find kind of the qualities in a skater to highlight and to encourage them when they make mistakes. So it really was quite disheartening to see that there was really no attention given on air to the fact that, you know, Anna was visibly not in a condition to compete. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, if fans watching from home can tell, then people who are actually, you know, were skaters, are skaters, are commentating for TV can also tell as well.
Yeah. And of course, it's a complex issue. There are differences in what commentators can and can't say. And we are talking about a domestic event that is sponsored by the Russian Federation. And Ted Barton was invited to commentate on this. Has been for the past couple of seasons, I believe. He's been doing the English commentary. And so there is a bit of a question as to, for example, what his motivations are. How much is this like following the party line with him being invited to an event that is sponsored by the Federation? How much is his own opinions? I mean, he's been following these skaters for quite a long time, and I fully believe that he has personal investment in seeing them succeed. But I think there's also a degree of reinforcing a culture where long-term health of athletes is disregarded in favor of immediate success, and where it is quite common to skate with injuries.
We are being quite critical, you know, of Ted Barton's commentary in particular. I think it is important to point out that, again, like Tilda said, it's very difficult to kind of extricate, you know, his personal kind of investment in these skaters. And the fact that he is providing, you know, a service for English-speaking fans who want to watch with commentary but don't understand the Russian commentary for a domestic event like Russian Nationals, and that he is kind of providing that for people who want it. But at the same time, what, I guess, financial considerations go into the decision to commentate Russian Nationals and what he is and is not allowed to say on air, I think is something that we have to keep in the back of our minds, but that ultimately we do not know the full extent of.
And I think we've also talked in previous episodes, perhaps in the episode we had about the medical side of figure skating, where we've talked about like culture of competing with injuries and how it is often portrayed as like personal strength, that someone is being very strong and brave skating with injuries, and how this is a really toxic way of looking at things. And I think this view has only been exacerbated by COVID.
Yeah, so, you know, just to go back to Ted's comment about, you know, people question her, I think it's really troubling to portray Anna winning Russian Nationals, which she did for the third time, as, you know, some kind of evidence of her own personal strength, or, you know, her pushing back against quote unquote, you know, doubters or haters, and to really frame what is fair criticism of her physical condition as the personal vendetta of fans, when from all accounts, there was ample reason to be concerned for her safety and for the safety of those around her. And I just, like you just said, Tilda, I think it's very toxic to frame this in such a way that, you know, it's should just be considered as a positive that she won, rather than considering kind of all of the underbelly of the culture that caused her to get to this place.
And I think with a crisis like this, it could, in the best case scenario, lead to a change in the status quo, where we sort of see how unsustainable this is and where that could sort of provide a window of opportunity for long-term change. But what I'm seeing instead is sort of a doubling down on the current practices, and it's making me not very hopeful for the future of the sport, if I'm being quite honest.
Right, and, you know, at the end of the day, I guess if you want to put it just in terms of results, the top ladies are still competing quote-unquote well, despite most of them having been afflicted with COVID at this point. Like, you know, Anna was able to skate a clean free skate and was rewarded very generously by the judges for it. So, you know, it doesn't seem like there's really any inclination for them to change, or any, you know, evidence of a shift in attitude if they're kind of rewarding the same risky behaviors that they've always been rewarding.
And then, of course, we have two more spring competitions being announced. Not sure what's going to happen with those.
Yeah, and I think on one hand, I am just kind of, why, capital W, as to just why this is necessary. Especially, you know, they were announced during Nationals, which, you know, by all accounts was kind of quite a messy affair. But on the other hand, from a logistical standpoint, I do understand why they decided to organize two more events, because, again, a lot of top skaters didn't make it to Nationals because they were sick. And also, Russia usually chooses their world teams after the European Championships, but those were canceled. So they're going to need some way to kind of determine who actually qualifies for the team. So their national champions are automatically guaranteed spots, but there are still spots open that the remaining skaters are going to have to compete for. And I think their hope is that the skaters who were ill will be recovered by February or March and able to kind of fight for those spots. But
yes, but on the other hand, I think, I mean, this is the way they do it every year, but I think that they insisted on this drawn out selection process is kind of baffling, even with this many of their skaters out of the competition, because I feel like it would have been better to just settle the team quickly now and give more recovery time to those who had to sit out Russian nationals who are obviously not well. So I feel like the smartest thing for them to do would be to just adopt the Japanese way of selecting a world team, for example.
Well, speaking of...
Oh yeah, let's talk about the Japanese nationals.
Yeah, still, you know, a little upsetting, but for different reasons.
Let's talk about the podiums. For men's singles, we have gold, Yuzuru Hanyu, silver, Shoma Uno, bronze, Yuma Kageyama. And for ladies singles, we have in first place, Rika Kihira, in second place, Kaori Sakamoto, and in third place, Satoko Miyahara. We did not have a pairs event, so we can skip that category. For ice dance, we have in first place, Misato Komatsubara and Team Coletto. In second place, Kana Muramoto and Daisuke Takahashi. And in third place, Rikako Fukase and Eichu Cho.
Yeah, so Japan did announce their world teams right after nationals, so they're the same as the medalists for the men and ladies. And then Team Coco for ice dance and Mira and Kihara for pairs.
So again, I think this selection is smarter to do. And it's the way it's always been done. But I think probably the Russian Federation should have looked at the Japanese selection method and been like, probably a better thing to do in these trying times.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to point out neither of them are perfect. I think kind of in the interest of not infecting even more people than have already been infected, the Japanese method in that sense is better, but also comes with its own baggage of kind of skaters being pressured to come to nationals. So let's kind of get into that. In terms of athletes being infected, there's not really any comparison between Japan and Russia. As far as we know, there are not any top skaters, at least, who have gotten sick as a result of COVID.
Which, of course, could be because there's been less COVID spread in Japan than there has been in Russia, which is not saying that Japan has done a good job keeping control of the pandemic, but Russia is a lot worse.
That said, there has been some behavior that, you know, occurred at Japanese nationals and then at the Nagoya Skating Festival where skaters took group photos without masks. And Rika Kihira did clarify in a reply that, you know, they only took off the masks for the group photo.
They should not have taken off the masks anyway.
Beyond kind of the skaters taking that risk, it does point to a lack of strict enforcement of the measures that were put in place as a result of the pandemic. And it is important to point out that there was quite a sizable audience at the skating festival. You know, even if they all were wearing masks, you can't really socially distance if you're packed in.
And we talked about this in the last episode, so we won't go into it here because it seems like Japanese nationals followed around the same precautions as they did at the NHK Trophy, which we discussed in episode 52. So go and listen to that. But one big difference here compared to the NHK is that we have some skaters and coaches who had to travel internationally to get to Japanese nationals.
Yeah, so we had Satoko, who trains in Canada with Lee Barkel. She came 2 weeks before the start of the event to complete the quarantine period in Japan before she could compete, which is good. Lee Barkel also came all the way from Canada. You know, just for her, she was his only skater at the event, which I thought was kind of strange that he would come all the way for, you know, just one skater. And then you also had the Swiss team with Stefan Lambiel, so Rika, Shoma, Koshiro. It's not known when they arrived in Japan, but it's likely that they also came early because Japan is quite strict with their quarantine requirements. So according to the U.S. Embassy, you need a negative PCR test in order to even get on the flight to Japan. And then you get tested again at the airport, and then you have to self-quarantine for 14 days.
And then also, it's worth pointing out that after Japanese nationals, they did have a big surge of cases and there is now a more extensive travel ban. So if it had been the week after, it is doubtful if even Lee Barkel and Stefan would have been able to get to Japan.
Yeah, and important again to note that that would only have been for foreign nationals. So the skaters themselves who are Japanese citizens would still have been able to come. So it would have cut down, you know, on some of the risk, but the majority of people coming in from abroad are going to be skaters. And it did seem that spectators were discouraged from throwing gifts or shouting during programs, and face masks were mandatory. But all that said, the rink was still pretty full, and that obviously poses the question of why did Japan choose to hold this event with an audience at all? Because, you know, at the time that this happened, Japan's cases were also on the rise, and they discovered that the more infectious mutation was already present in the country. So kind of just to hammer that point home, on the day of the men's short program on December 25th, the daily cases in Japan reached an all-time high, and they were having this sporting event indoors with an audience.
It doesn't look good, basically. And I feel like there is no reason why this couldn't have been held without an audience, like something like Skate America. And I believe that the US Nationals will also be held without an audience.
Yeah, except for funding, which is usually kind of the bottleneck in skating in general. But I think even that, you know, the money that you would gain from fans purchasing tickets kind of falters when you consider the fact that USFS is going to be holding at least two big events without spectators this season. And they do not have near the amount of sponsorship that JSF does. And just figure skating in general in the US does not have the same level of national interest that has made figure skating so lucrative in Japan. So in that sense, if a Fed that isn't as well funded is able to kind of have these events in a bubble, it makes the decision even more head-scratching to me.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it might be one reason to that they want to maintain the sort of business as usual because it's such a lucrative industry and they sort of want to keep this machine going. There's a lot more at stake, especially considering that Japanese National is seen as a very major event. So it might have been pressure from sponsors, etc.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. And it could also be pressure to showcase quote-unquote safe attendance, because the 2021 Tokyo Olympics, which obviously were postponed, are coming up this summer as of now that we know of. They haven't been canceled yet. And there definitely is pressure among, you know, the Japanese kind of athletic industry to be like, okay, yes, we can do this safely. And you don't need to worry about, you know, being in the audience during, you know, the Olympics or Nationals or whatever event, you know, comes up. But it is important, again, to point out that China was planning to do something similar. They were supposed to hold the Grand Prix final this year in Beijing. And obviously the 2022 Olympics are going to be in Beijing. So the Grand Prix final was meant to be kind of like a test venue or a test event for the Olympics. And that was ultimately canceled. And Cup of China, like we mentioned in the last episode, was only held with domestic skaters. And given that, you know, the 2022 Olympics are Winter Olympics, where figure skating is actually going to be featured, that seems like kind of a much bigger loss to take for the hosting country than, you know, the Summer Olympics versus, you know, a figure skating national championship.
Okay, one thing I want to touch upon is I think Yuzuru Hanyu should be the JSF / ISU pandemic chief, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, so he competed for the first time this season at Nationals after he pulled out of the Grand Prix because he was concerned about both his own health and the health of his fans who would have come to see him. And he, throughout Nationals, was very, very vocal about his discomfort regarding the risks of competing in front of a live audience during a pandemic. And he made it clear that Japanese Nationals was a prerequisite for Worlds. So anyone who wanted to qualify for Worlds was required to show up to Nationals. But, you know, in all of his interviews, he really did bring the point back home to COVID and the fact that, you know, athletes are at risk for complications, like we talked about earlier, and also for the potential for, you know, healthy young people to spread it to vulnerable populations. And how he and, you know, other young people at the event considered it their responsibility to not contribute to the risk. And he was very candid about his concerns regarding having this competition.
Yeah, I think it's really admirable that he's using his influence and status to spread awareness of this, especially since, well, yeah, he had been pretty much pressured into competing. At the same time, I think it's not great that it is the athletes who have to bring up these questions, because I feel like this should be officials who, this is the responsibility of officials to tackle these questions. And it shouldn't really be up to a competitor to be the one to raise these issues.
Right. Like, we like to joke around, like, you know, users should be the pandemic chief. But it does make me quite sad at the end of the day that he felt kind of the burden of responsibility to come out and speak on behalf of what I'm sure were many skaters who, you know, for one reason or another, were not comfortable really saying anything, but also felt these concerns. And it does make me quite sad, actually, that athletes can't just be athletes during this time. They also kind of have to be like a watchdog for the federations to make sure they're being held accountable. And on the flip side of this, I think it is important for us to note that Yuzuru is in quite a unique position right now in the sport. He's a two-time Olympic champion. He's one of the most recognizable faces in the sport, probably ever. So, you know, there's less risk to him in terms of backlash to speak out and to really make his position known versus, you know, someone from a smaller federation or someone who's only been on the international stage for a few seasons, that he really is in a position where he can make his concerns more vocal and not have to fear as much that there's going to be retribution against him.
I think it's really good that he's using his platform in that way.
Yeah, and I do think it's important, you know, to say that, because obviously we're not holding it against any skaters who didn't speak out, because that is a very difficult thing to do. And, you know, you do have to consider kind of political repercussions of saying something like that and being so openly critical. So we do commend him for his courage, for sure. But, you know, we don't fault anybody who chose to stay silent despite having concerns. And I think Nathan Chen is in a similar sort of position. He did make some comments over the summer about the confusion surrounding the Grand Prix series when it was kind of like a will they, won't they kind of situation. So in August, when they announced that they would be going ahead with a quote unquote normal Grand Prix, he did have quite a few questions that he asked, like, you know, logistically, what's going to happen? Like, are they going to change location? Is there going to be an audience? Like, are we going to be there in person? Things like that. But, you know, Yuzuru is really the only person to date who's been so openly, you know, critical.
And I think it would be easier for the coaches to speak out. They also have a risk that it could be taken out on their students if they speak out. But they are not in as vulnerable a position as the skaters. And the coaches are often older people who have a lot more experience, who have a lot more understanding than the skaters, who are often quite young as well. So I think that we should also be talking about the skaters who are being quite silent on this.
It's a really difficult tightrope, I think, for coaches specifically to walk, because unless you're one of the top, you know, five coaches in the world in terms of your skaters' results, it can be really nerve-wracking to worry that, you know, it might be taken out on your students if you choose to say something. I think my issue more is with the officials, because, you know, you're running the event. Like, you're in the perfect position to object or to institute kind of stricter regulations, and none of them have really done so, which is very odd to me.
On the other hand, you think that the officials aren't necessarily in the media spotlight, and if they were to speak out, it would more likely be within the organization. So we don't know, like, the politics of what is happening behind the scenes, but I would have expected something, you know?
Yeah, and that, especially given that a lot of the officials are older and they're in a higher risk category due to their age for more severe complications of COVID.
Oh yeah, if we're talking judges and stuff.
But like you said, we don't know what's happening, like, behind the scenes. Maybe some of them have spoken up and maybe some of the precautions they're taking as a result of that, but just in general, people who are in more of a position of power, not being public with their statements, I think, is quite strange in a time like this.
So let's talk a little bit about the U.S. Nationals.
Yeah, so U.S. Nationals is going to be the same as Skate America in terms of being held in a bubble, so no spectators. Based on what was said at Skate America, we can assume that it's going to be basically the same, so skaters and coaches all have to test negative and they have to quarantine while they're waiting for their results. They can only use certain elevators in the venue, and they have restricted meal delivery to just minimize contact between people. Mervyn Tran, who skates pairs with Olivia Serafini, said prior to Skate America that they were fully quarantined from Las Vegas, where the event was held, and that USFS was actually very strict with them in saying that they wouldn't be given any warnings and that it was going to be a zero tolerance kind of situation. So they would be out of the event if they were found to be violating the quarantine in any way, which is, you know, quite a strong stance for them to take. So we commend them for that. Despite what Mervyn said about the Fed generally being really strict with their COVID restrictions, U.S. Nationals has turned out not to be kind of as safe as we'd initially hoped. Tom Zakrzek is one of the coaches of several of the skaters who compete at the senior elite level, and he was reported to be COVID positive. And one of his skaters, Paige Rydberg, also withdrew from the competition because she also tested positive. But in spite of the fact that there are at least two positive cases in that rink that we know about, Brady Tennell and Vincent Joe, who both train with Tom Z and with Paige, still competed at U.S. Nationals. And obviously this is a problem because it's pretty likely that they were in close contact, at least with their coach or with, you know, potentially other people who were infected. And so it poses a pretty significant risk to the safety of the event if the contact tracing isn't being properly done. You know, there would probably have been face-to-face coaching at some point in the period leading up to them traveling to U.S. Nationals.
Or at least face-to-face coaching with someone else who they have then had contact with because everyone trains in the same rink.
Yeah, so the CDC is pretty specific about how contact tracing should be handled. So if you're found to be a close contact, you're supposed to quarantine for 14 days. So depending on when Brady and Vincent last interacted with Tom Z or with Paige or with anybody else in their rink who's potentially infected, it's possible that even though they tested negative when they arrived at the event, that could be due to them still being in the incubation period of the virus, where it's not amplified enough to be picked up on a test, because the average onset of symptoms and when you get the most reliable test result is 5 to 6 days post-infection. So if they did have a negative test upon arriving, it is possible that that could have been a false negative rather than them actually not being infected. And we do want to point out that there is precedent for skaters pulling out of U.S. Nationals due to COVID exposure. Christina Carrera and Anthony Ponomarenko, who compete in ice dance, ended up withdrawing before the event because someone in their rink tested positive. And they did specify that both of them personally had negative tests, but they decided in the end that it was kind of in their best interest and in the best interest of the safety of the event to pull out completely, which, you know, was a really commendable and responsible decision. And I think, again, like kind of everything we've discussed in this episode, it's a pretty complex issue to kind of weave your way around, but it's not, you know, really fair to fault skaters necessarily for wanting to compete here, because for some of them, it's their first big event of the season, or it could be really their only like competitive experience of the season. But, you know, the fact that people seem to have slipped through the cracks does raise some questions about holes in the bubble that they've created that could potentially compromise the event.
Yeah, and as for Canadian Nationals, originally they had postponed it until February, but now this week they finally decided to cancel it completely. And I think as a decision, this makes sense. I mean, Skate Canada had already been cancelled in the fall, and apart from that, they've been experimenting with virtual competitions. But having a virtual nationals would have been too big of a logistical challenge, I think. I think everyone had been hoping we'd be in a better place at this point in time so that it wouldn't be unrealistic to aim for in-person competitions in the spring. But as you already know, the situation hasn't improved. And I think with this in mind that the cancellation makes sense. They had planned like a number of measures to reduce the danger, such as reducing the number of competitors and only allowing junior and senior categories and only having two flights of skaters for each discipline, for example. But obviously they felt that this wasn't enough. So I definitely recommend checking out Roman Sadowski's vlog. He talks about his point of view of the cancellation. And obviously for the skaters who are missing out on nationals, it is devastating. Obviously they want to compete. But I think if the organizers felt that there was no way to conduct the event in a safe way and following the rather strict restrictions in place in Canada, I think it's better to cancel it. And, of course, Roman Sadovsky also talked about how figure skating doesn't have as much money and resources as, for example, the NHL, where they can make the logistics of the bubbles work out. I mean, as you said before, Kait, the USFSA made a go of having a bubble, but in the end, it's not exactly a bubble in the strictest sense of the word. Perhaps not as safe as we would like to have seen. So, regrettable that Canadian Nationals had to be cancelled, but I think it's admirable that they took the decision.
So it sounds like the Canadian Fed is a little bit uncertain still about, you know, if Worlds happens, whether or not they're going to choose to send skaters there just for their own safety, which is obviously a pretty unfortunate predicament for skaters to be in. But they have been having what they're calling the Skate Canada Challenge. So a lot of their top skaters have been competing in these virtual events, which is kind of like a series of mini nationals, just with a smaller field. So I would imagine that if they were to choose to send skaters to nationals, it would probably be on the results, or at least based somewhat on the results of the Skate Canada Challenge.
Yeah, no, that I think that makes sense. We don't know at this point in time if Worlds is going to happen, or if they're willing to take the risk of sending skaters there if it does happen. Okay, so I want to have a little bit of a Swedish corner here. As perhaps most of you know, I live in Sweden. I live within walking distance from the arena where they are going to hold Worlds this year. So this is very, very local, and I have some concerns. I generally hold with the viewpoint from the last episode that Worlds in Sweden is probably not a good idea because Sweden has had a very bad approach to COVID. First things first, the Worlds website still has a tickets page. They're still saying that tickets will be available if/when the government releases new restrictions. So currently the law in Sweden is that there's a limit of 50 people in the audience of a public event. But in the regions, so in Stockholm region, the limit is 8 people in the audience. So that's currently. And obviously having 8 people in the audience for Worlds is not going to happen. They are probably at the moment banking on those restrictions being lessened. And I think they probably will, because those are very relatively recent and I don't think they will hold very long. But to sort of keep pushing back taking the decision, I think is pretty unwise, because we're only like 10 weeks away from Worlds. And you can't keep waiting and you know, release tickets the last week, not knowing if and when the restrictions are going to change. And another worrying thing is that the Swedish Nationals had to be cancelled in December because of regional restrictions.
Yeah, in terms of like the wind vane for deciding whether or not events should be happening, if you're cancelling your own domestic competition that people don't have to cross borders for, I feel like that's a pretty bad sign.
Yeah. And all of the ice rinks in Stockholm were closed starting the 20th of December, closed indefinitely for the public. So I think that's also a pretty bad sign. So the government response in Sweden has been pretty confused and uncoordinated. I don't think there is an infrastructure in place with regards to following up on people arriving from abroad or setting up quarantine or testing. So if the ISU and the Swedish Fed do decide to go through with Worlds, I think they're going to have some issues just on the lack of infrastructure and the lack of guidelines from the Swedish authorities. And there's also the financial situation. Holding Worlds without an audience could reportedly lead to a massive financial loss for the Swedish Federation. So they've talked about potentially being up to 3 million euros lost, and most of that is from ticket revenue, because around 60% of the revenue from Worlds is from ticket sales, and if we're not going to have any, that's a big loss. So that could potentially really endanger the Federation. But apparently, the ISU has guaranteed them enough financial support that it would cover any potential financial loss. So the ISU has told the Swedish Fed to keep working, and that the Worlds will happen with or without an audience.
This is some famous last words stuff right here.
Yeah, I found that quote pretty concerning, if I'm being quite honest. I wonder how the ISU will finance that, if they have to go in with money to support the Swedish Federation due to the lack of revenue.
Right, like, I feel like the ISU is famously not a wealthy federation by, you know, international sports standards. Like, when cases first really started surging in March and there was so much speculation over whether 2020 Worlds in Montreal was going to be canceled, it ultimately was canceled by the government of Quebec and not by the ISU. So they really are kind of constantly in this game of chicken with the government and with, you know, the hosting federation to see who's going to cancel first and kind of bear the brunt of the financial damage. So in that sense, I do have questions about logistically how that would happen if they ended up, you know, having to cancel and taking that loss. Because it really doesn't sound like the Swedish Federation or the Swedish government is too keen on canceling either.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be likely that the Swedish authorities will step in to cancel it. So I think this will be entirely on the Swedish Federation and the ISU if it had to be cancelled. It's just, I think at this point, it's just a matter of they're waiting to see if it's going to be an audience or not. I think that's the thing they're looking at. Even without an audience, I think it's really concerning. To hold it with an audience, I think at this point, is looking pretty unlikely.
Yeah, especially like what we just talked about, right? You know, there are teams that have shown that they're not really willing to strictly observe the public health measures that are in place. So it's like, even without an audience, that doesn't minimize the risk entirely.
Definitely not.
It's like the call is coming from inside the house, but it's like COVID edition with figure skating. Like, it's, you know, skaters and teams that are kind of posing risks to the other competitors. So that's, you know, something to kind of just keep in mind. As little as we want to think about having a major international event right now, unless something happens the next couple weeks, it does seem like they're going to try to go ahead with it.
And the organizers of Worlds has said, "The health and safety of the participants is our highest priority. We have a close collaboration with ISU to ensure a safe organization of the event. What kind of measures this entails is not yet decided." And again, it's just such a statement that fills me with not much confidence, considering how the ISU has handled the GP series. The idea that collaboration with ISU is a positive thing is doubtful.
Yeah, so that was kind of a very, you know, comprehensive rundown of what's happening on the organizational side of things. But I think it's important also to not lose sight of the more human aspect of this, which is how is this going to impact the skaters? So not holding Worlds at all could also disadvantage some countries or disciplines when it comes to deciding Olympic spots, because Olympic spots are decided at the Worlds of the previous year.
Yeah, I think that the ISU should be considering a different selection criteria, not necessarily based on the results of the competition. But at the same time, it's hard to see a good way of doing it. For example, if you use world standings or season standings, that will also be flawed because we have had only domestic competitions this season. We also have a serious disadvantage for skaters who are coming from smaller feds where they have been unable to hold competitions in 2020, because it's really only the major federations that have been able to put together competitions. And again, if we use the results from Worlds, that's also very outdated at this point.
Yeah, I think that the selection rules are codified in the ISU handbook as far as world spots determine Olympic spots. So I would assume that there would probably need to be some sort of amendment if they really did end up changing it. And, you know, it was an exceptional time, so I think that could happen, but I think they're just pushing so hard right now to make 2021 Worlds happen that it doesn't seem like they're really open to that route, at least at this point in time. And they are using the results of 2019 Worlds to determine who gets spots at 2021 Worlds. So in that sense, I guess there's precedent for that happening. But yeah, there's just not really a good way to handle this where everybody wins. And at the end of the day, it's going to come down to what they decide is the most important thing to prioritize.
Right, okay, I think that pretty much covers what we wanted to discuss today. Thank you so much for listening. We're not sure when we will be back for our next episode, but keep a lookout on our Twitter and our website.
So thanks to our transcribing and quality control team, which is Bex, Lay, and Danny. Evie for editing, and Gab for graphic design.
If you want to get in touch with us, please feel free to contact us via our website inthelowpodcast.com or on Twitter. You can find our episodes on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify.
If you enjoy the show and want to help support the team, then please consider making a donation to us on our Ko-fi page. And we'd like to give a huge thank you to all the listeners who have contributed to our team thus far.
You can find the links to all our social media pages and our Ko-fi on the website. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a rating and a review if you enjoy the show. Thanks for listening. This has been
Kite
and Tilda.
Bye.
Bye.